So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 1, Text 34 to 39. So I'll read the first verses up to 38. Translation. Sudyumna had been transformed into the best of beautiful women who excite this sexual desire and was surrounded by other women. Upon seeing this beautiful woman loitering near his ashram, Buddha, the son of the moon, immediately desired to enjoy her. The beautiful woman also desired to accept Buddha, the son of the king of the moon, as her husband. Thus Buddha begot in her womb a son named Pururav. I heard from reliable sources that King Sudyumna, the son of the Manu, having thus achieved femininity, remembered his familial spiritual master, Vasishtha. Upon seeing Sudyumna's deplorable condition, Vasishtha was very much aggrieved. Desiring for Sudyumna to regain his maleness, Vasishtha again began to worship Lord Shiva, Shankar. Translation. O King Parikshit, Lord Shiva was pleased with Vasishtha. Therefore, to satisfy him and to keep his own word to Parvati, Lord Shiva said to that saintly person, "Your disciple Sudyumna may remain a male for 1 month and a female for the next. In this way, he may rule the world as he likes." Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The word Gotrajaha is significant in this connection. Brahmins generally act as spiritual masters of two dynasties. One is their disciplic succession, and the other is the dynasty born of their semen. Both descendants belong to the same Gotra, or dynasty. In the Vedic system, we sometimes find that both Brahmins and Kshatriyas and even Vaisyas come in the disciplic succession of the same rishis, because the Gotra and dynasties are one. There is no difference between the disciple and the family born of semen. The same system still prevails in India, in Indian society, especially in regard to marriage, for which the Gotra is calculated. Here the word Gotraja refers to those born in the same dynasty, whether they be disciples or members of the family. Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorengi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Manchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is carrying on from the last canto where they were talking about King Satyavrata and the inundation of the world and subsequent appearance of Matsya avatar. And so the next question that Maharaj Parikshit asks is, So, what is Kubika Skin Sati Vata became Vyavasvata Manu? And so he wants to understand what is the dynasty of Vyavasvata Manu? So, this is very much in line with this particular verse. The dynasty. So, he begins to explain the whole sequence, how Lord Brahma, then from his mind, Marichi, and from Marichi came Kasyapa, and then the combination of Aditi and Kasyapa produced, Kasyapa, Aditi, Vivasvan. And then from Vivasvan, Shradadev, or Vaisvasvata Manu. So this is how Manu appears. And then Manu, of course, in the proper culture, we desire to have heir, somebody to take over when I leave. And so he was having some problems. Seems to happen a lot in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so this was before he eventually had 10 sons, headed by Maharaj Ikshvaku. This was the beginning of the Raghu dynasty. But before that, there was some difficulty in having children, so he approached Vasishtha, and Vasishtha arranged that by his prayers to, I think it was the Varuna, that he could have a child. And obviously he wanted a son, but his wife wanted a girl. And so it says when there's a combination between male and female, the strongest wins. The child is born according to the strongest sexual partner. So it seems like by the desire of his wife, a woman was born, Ila. And so King Sujumna was, Satyavrata was very, Vyavasvata Manu was very disappointed. And he went to Vasishtha, and Vasishtha prayed to the Supreme Lord, and he changed it round again. So he had, this is where Sudyumna comes in. Sudyumna was a beautiful boy, and so he became the king. And he was out with his ministers. They were travelling in the heavenly planets, and they went to the foot of Mount Samaru, and they went into a forest, and lo and behold, they all changed. Suddenly became women. And so when he came out and his spiritual master Vasishtha saw him, he was completely shocked and disgusted. He thought, I've got to do something about this. So he prayed to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva said, okay, we can fulfill half of this. Said 1 month he left to be a boy, and or a man, the next month a woman. So in that way he managed to rule the kingdom, and eventually he took, what did he take? Vanaprastha. He'd had enough. And he left Pururava in charge, his eldest son. We'll go on to this verse in a minute. I was reading through the history, and I was thinking that this is material life. The whole of the ninth canto is lists of great kings. Yeah, I think, why is there so many great kings and all the stories behind them? It seems to be a little bit out of context with the rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam in one respect. But, you know, we can learn from that they're all big conquerors, big enjoyers. And, you know, even to such a degree that, you know, they get so much materially absorbed that they try to make material solutions to the problems. And look at how many problems were in this, from Vyavasvata Manu down. You know, it change, change, change. And never were they satisfied. And so this is material life. That we automatically, due to our conditioning, we immediately go to the material solution, usually. And then the material solution, does it work? Has anybody found it working yet? Put your hand up. Let me know if you have. But there's a chance, isn't there, in the future. It'll work in the future, don't worry, I'll get it right one day. Hey? It's temporary, yes. And we're convinced that one day I'll get the formula right. But according to Bhagavatam, it's going to be a big disappointment. So this is one thing about this ninth canto. We can very easily understand that when we start the 11th canto towards the end, the earth personified Bhumi is talking to the, I forget which king it was, he was talking to one great king, and he says, everybody's just like you, all the kings have been just like you, they think they can enjoy this situation, but they never do. I forget the words it uses, actually, they're all disappointed in the end. So now we come to this verse. One other thing we can learn from this is that automatically we're not the controllers. We think, I'm a man, I'm a woman, and I've got this propensity and I can do so many things. And even in devotional service, the propensity is there to think we're actually doing things. But this is not our philosophy. It says in Bhagavad Gita that we are the observer. Supreme Lord's also the observer. And everything is going on automatically according to the, what is it? The modes of nature. And so here we see 1 minute a person, even monthly changes. It's so absorbing that it changes from a man to a woman, and then he becomes convinced, I'm a woman. And then a month later he becomes convinced he's a man. So this is... Who's convinced they're a woman? Everybody convinced you're a woman? Everybody convinced they're a man? Definitely. But we're not. So this is self-realization when we come to that platform. We start to realize, wait a minute, there's something beyond what my particular understanding of life. My realizations. And so Bhagavad Gita recommends what process? Detached work. In all the way through detached work, even devotional service, we're becoming detached from being the doer, we become detached from the bodily identification with the situation. And then as we become detached, then realization that we're not the body eventually. And then devotional service becomes natural. So here we have talking about disciplic succession and gocha. And in this particular verse it says they're more or less the same. What does it say? But descendants belong to the same gochara or dynasty. So the dynasty is like son to father to son, isn't it? Son to like this. So the dynasty is two, in that one is through semen and one is through initiation. And so in our line it's particularly not necessarily what we see as initiation, diksha. Let's have a look about this. Prabhupada was diksha initiated by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, his spiritual master, which is most prominent in our line, is, who is it? Gaurakishore Das Banerjee. That was a diksha initiation. But then Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he's the spiritual master or shiksha guru of Gaurakishore Das Babaji. And in our disciplic succession, the guru of Bhakti Vinod Thakur is Jagannath Das Babaji, shiksha. That wasn't his diksha guru. Vamsi Das Babaji, I think it was. Vipin Bihari, that's it. And then there was some disagreement of, on the transcendental platform. And so he sought to take shelter of Jagannath Das Babaji. And so whatever gochara we're in, these things are just a medium or a facility to take shelter of the disciplic succession. And the disciplic succession is the sound vibration. This is the real disciplic succession if we take shelter of the sound vibration. And the Diksha initiation is to make us committed. It's like we may say so many things and we may be serious, but when it comes to signing on the dotted line, we become a bit hesitant. Wait a minute. I went to the hospital the other day and I was having an examination. I had some tests and then they said, hey, you've got to sign this. I thought, what? I didn't realise you had to sign things. And I read it, I thought, this is a disclaimer. If anything happens to me, it's not their fault. And I got a bit, I'm thinking twice about it. There's some risk here. And then I read all the risks. I thought, do I really want to do this? And one particular, I went 2 days running the first day. It was so painful, I just said, forget it. I said, I'm not going through with it. And anyway, that's another thing. But where were we now? Signing on the dotted line. And so somebody who's serious, they'll actually think twice. They'll, okay, this means commitment. So that's what Diksha actually is. But the real thing is, are we prepared to hear? This is where it's talking about the Brahmins or the leaders of all the other castes. And that's one of the qualities of the Brahmins, or the main quality. He becomes, as Prabhupada said, he becomes well-versed in Shastra and is able to teach others. Patan, Partan, Yajan, Yajan, Dana, Pratigraha. We learn Shastra and we give Shastra. And we take charity and we give charity. It's the same thing, actually. There's so much fuss made about taking Brahmin initiation so we can worship the deity. And it becomes prominent. But what's the real Brahmin? A Brahmin is a teacher. A real Brahmin is a preacher. We have to worship the deity. And this becomes prominent that when we need somebody to worship the deity, we'll give somebody Brahmin. But actually we should understand that the real Brahmin is one who is the teacher. The two of these aspects, learning Shastra and giving Shastra, taking charity, which may be in the form of donations, and giving knowledge again. This is a charity that we give twice. And then worshipping the deity and teaching others how to worship the deity. Still, it's teaching. And so, I know previously, one of the leaders of this particular yatra, when they were qualifying somebody to take Brahmin initiation, they used to analyse, are they preaching? Are they going out and teaching? Are they going on a Sangitam? That were actually one of the things which was taken into account. So this is the real duty of a Brahmin, is that it's the Lord Chaitanya's Sangitam movement. And therefore we need people who can, we need devotees who can give devotional service, or become a vehicle for giving devotional service. This is where purity of a Brahman comes in. To be effective preacher, we have to be a vehicle for devotional service to flow through us. It's not our ability again. And then when Krishna sees that we're sufficiently qualified and detached, then we become an empowered representative. It's not a matter of our particular... Brahman's a leader, that's the word, isn't it? But he doesn't appear to be a leader, does he? Externally, what history do we have of Brahmins? We have... they're usually in the background. They're not necessarily rolling the sleeves up and getting into everything. The mode of goodness. Mode of goodness means working with the intelligence and the mind. In other words, taking time to understand things properly and then giving the benefit of their purity and combined spiritual understanding and experience, passing that on to the administrators or the managers. The managers usually, it was the Kshatriyas. And then the Kshatriyas are the one who are expert in organising and putting things into practice. But the tendency is now, if It seems to be. I mean, it's changing. Things are changing. We're starting to think about, what is it? What's that word? That magic word? You know, where we look into the future. Vision. That's it. Vision. Vision. And, you know, it's like, it's very strange that it's very difficult to get on board. It's a very simple, I was talking to one devotee, he said it's straightforward. But it's not straightforward to put into practice. That's the last thing we want to do. Anyway, we want to get things done. But what does that, getting things done is the next more. What more of the nature are the kshatriyas in, the administrators? Eh? Passion. Yeah, but in the protection and this mode of passion, is it? This is mode of passion. So passion means that they're very capable, but they tend to be a little bit passionate. And so what happens is that eventually, what happens in the mode of passion, it sets off and it's great. And in the after some time, it becomes a bit iffy. And then after some more time, it becomes very, very difficult. So the Brahmins are taking time to think things out so that we don't get into that dilemma, we don't get into difficulty, but we're able to see how things are changing, how we have to change with the times. We're a movement who... I'm talking about Brahmins still. Prabhupada said we need Brahmins. This movement's meant for Brahmins. So I'm capitalising on this point so that we appreciate what a Brahmin's real duty is. As this movement progresses, it'll become more and more obvious that, you know, the temple devotees and the, or what they call in England, the clergy, they don't necessarily do so much physically. But, you know, we've become more thoughtful so that we can actually guide society. This is where the education, training and education will be more and more prominent. So another qualification of a Brahmin. We're known by our particular qualification, not by our birth. And so when we are assessing a Brahmin, we're not necessarily assessing where he particularly comes from. What's one of the qualities of a Brahmin? Sama, Dhamma, Tapasocham. Shanti, Ajam, Evachar. Jnana, what is it? Astikam, Brahma, Kama, Svabhavajam. But also the list of... the Brahmin is in knowledge. Is that right? And in Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, it's got in the 13th chapter, 8 to 12, 20 odd different qualities, I think. And one of them is, you know, honesty, straightforwardness. How does it start now? It goes, Amanit Ramadam, Ahimsa Shanti Arjivam. And so, one important quality which Prabhupada, I was looking through the one particular, it was in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita actually, and Prabhupada was talking about five regulative principles. He was talking about, what are they now? No gambling, meeting, intoxication and illicit sex. But before he put all these four down, the fifth one was in line. And it was simplicity. No duplicity. This is the quality of a Brahmin. We should be so straightforward that we can reveal the truth even to an enemy. Now that takes some doing. So what to speak about amongst ourselves when we're dealing, that in order for us to be trusted by society, we have to be trustworthy between ourselves, exemplary trustworthy. Because if we're not trustworthy, then we won't influence everybody else, and you know, things between us won't be so good either. So trustworthiness is really, really important. That we can, what do they call it? What's that word? When the inside is like the outside. Transparency. And integrity. Integrity. What we know to be right, we do. You know, the values that we're supposed to have, we put into practice. And if we can, this is a Brahmin, if we don't get this right, then, you know, it's going to be really difficult to influence anybody else. So, you know, everybody has to work on themselves. And that's actually a sign of Krishna consciousness. If we're, it means sometimes we have to, you know, go beyond what we want to go beyond and, you know, say, okay, I have to get through this particular attachment I've got and be straightforward. And then this is actually dependence on Krishna. Krishna's in every situation. And the situation will work if we're actually working on that platform. But if we're not working on that platform, how can we actually see Krishna in the equation? Does that make sense? So that's another point. Talking about empowered, the Brahmins are empowered. What's a good example from history, especially the history of India? How one king was empowered like anything because he took notice of his Brahmin priest. Chandragupta. He was a powerful king, but his power came from Chanakya Pandit. At that time, the Muslims were so powerful in India. You know, they were completely subdued mostly, except for the southern Indian part. Even in South India there was Muslim intervention to some degree. And because Chandragupta, Chanakya Pandit was so expert Brahmin, and because Chandragupta was sold out to his Brahmin guide, he drove all the Muslims out of India, and he created one of the biggest empires India's ever known. So this is what it means to have proper dealings, isn't it, between the administrators and the Brahmins. It's made by Krishna, and if we apply the formula, then things work. But sometimes we apply our own formula, which is usually conditioned, and it doesn't work as well, unfortunately, or fortunately. So that's another point I wanted to make. We've just got a few minutes left. Anyway, I think I've said all I want to say. Has anybody got any comments or questions?